You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is the Locked On Jets podcast. It is Thursday, September 27th, 2018, and I'm your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com. As always, if you like this show, subscribe on either iTunes or Spotify, and leave it a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Since it's Thursday, that makes it Mailbag Thursday, so we will answer your questions, both emailed to me and submitted in the comments section of gangrenenation.com. So why don't we jump on in? And our first question was emailed to me by a listener named Dan. Hi, John. Question for the mailbag from across the pond, longtime listener to the pod and Jets fan. I grew up playing rugby in the UK, and we were always taught as kids not to let the high ball from kickoffs bounce, as you never know where it's going to go. It drives me crazy when I see this team letting it bounce inside the 10 and it trickles to the 1 on punts. What am I missing? If the offense was starting at the 10, it gives them a little more breathing space. Well, Daniel, I don't think you're missing anything. I just think Andre Roberts has done a bad job the last 2 weeks letting balls drop that he should not have let drop. And I think when you're at the 10, you have to catch the football. You know, when you're outside the 10, I think to me, and this is something I've heard from other people, the 5 yard line's kind of the line where maybe that's where you let it drop, because once it hits inside the 5, then you have a good shot of it going into the end zone. And if it doesn't, I mean, is there a big difference between starting from at the 4 yard line if they down it there, between starting it at the 2 yard line if they down it there? From just fair catching it at the, you know, so from fair catching it at the 5, not a big difference from that point. So I think from the 10, though, if you let the ball drop, there's a good chance the punt team's going to get down. It's just too far for the ball to roll. So I think Andre Roberts, who, you know, had an excellent week one, obviously had the long touchdown return, had a couple big returns, he's just got to do a better job. And, you know, he won that job in training camp because the Jets wanted a steady veteran return guy back there. Trenton Cannon kind of played himself out of the return role with the lack of ball security. So they thought that Roberts would be a steadier force back there. And he just needs to make better decisions. I think it's just, I don't think you're missing anything, Dan. I just think that he is not doing the job very effectively. He's got to do a better job judging the ball off the foot, making sure he's in a position to catch it. And if it's going to hit, you know, around the 10-yard line, you can't let it bounce in there, because the odds of it being a touchback are probably not as good as you'd want it to be. So just need better work on the punt returns, I think. Next question. Who would you be more worried about as an offensive coordinator this week? Is it the Jaguars secondary against our receivers and tight ends, or the Jaguars defensive line against our Swiss cheese offensive line? I think, listen, obviously both, but I think more so the Jaguars defensive line against the Jets offensive line. And the reason I say that is that, you know, after when I reviewed what happened last week in Cleveland, it became pretty clear that Sam Darnold really was rattled by the pass rush. And that's not something that happens every week. And listen, it's something that happens to even really good quarterbacks. They'll all have games, whether it's Rodgers, whether it's Brady, you know, they'll all have games where just the pass rush really gets into their head. It doesn't happen every week. And we've seen Darnold be able to function when under pressure. So it's not necessarily that Darnold turns into a deer in headlights against the pass rush. But you could see when I was rewatching it, you could see that Cleveland pass rush had gotten into his head a little bit. I mean, he was bailing on pockets earlier than he had to. He was bailing on clean pockets. He was not trusting his protection. And you could tell, it even made him a little bit jittery as he was going through his reads. I mentioned this on the show when I was recapping the game. When you're talking about a quarterback going through his progressions, usually they're one next to each other. You know, you're looking the furthest to the left, then a little further right, then a little further right. You don't want a guy's eyes darting back and forth, left, right, left, right. And I thought Darnold looked a little jittery in that sense on Thursday night against Cleveland. So now you're going up against a Jacksonville team with an absolutely ferocious pass rush. And, you know, I worry about whether, you know, you worry, will they get into Darnold's head the way Cleveland's did? And also, you don't want your franchise quarterback taking a ton of hits. You know, is daunting as going up against a great secondary is, and it can be daunting. Worst thing a secondary can do to a guy is intercept the quarterback. You know, the defensive line, a ferocious pass rush can hit the quarterback. You don't want him to take a ton of hits. You don't want him to get potentially hurt. So I think my bigger concern, and look, they're both concerns because Jacksonville has a tremendous defense, and they, you know, that back of that defense is no picnic to go against, but I'm more concerned about the pass rush of that defensive line against the Jets' offensive line, because the Jets' offensive line to this date, to this point, has not really shown much of an ability to protect Darnold. So that's where I'd go. Next question. In the last 7 years, the Oakland Athletics of Major League Baseball, who have one of the smallest payrolls, have made the playoffs 4 times, and the Jets haven't made the playoffs once, even though they have around 10 times the resources the A's have. Is there a correlation to this? We're talking two different sports, two different structures financially. I think, you know, the Jets don't have an advantage on the other teams, but certainly they're on even footing in a way. Some of the small market baseball teams are not, where baseball doesn't have a salary cap. I mean, I think it comes down to, it's quite simple, is the people running the Oakland A's are very good. You know, they tend to, A's have a lot of smart people, a lot of very credible people running their operation. And the people who run the Jets during this stretch have not been that good. And, you know, it's really that simple. I mean, you look at the reason the Jets struggle, it comes down to they haven't had the right guy running their team in terms of the GM. Now, will Mike Maccagnan change that? He still has time to change that, so I'm not ruling Maccagnan out. But, you know, Mike Tannenbaum did not do a good job. John Idzik did not do a good job. And the Jets did not have a good team. They were not putting a good product on the field. And then you also look at the head coaches. Rex Ryan, near the end of his run, not that successful. And, you know, a lot of his flaws really started to shine through after 2010. And then Todd Bowles, who to this day, again, Bowles still has time to turn it around. It's not, I'm not ready to declare the Todd Bowles era totally finished, but to this point, if you're asking me, has Todd Bowles done a good job? The answer is no. So I think, you know, above anything else, you just haven't had the right people running the team, and maybe that'll change. Maybe these guys, you hope they do. Now, it's tough to buy into that after a week where you lose to the Cleveland Browns, but you're hoping that maybe things, the teams just run a little bit better. And, you know, in Oakland, obviously they were the subject of the famous book Moneyball, which was turned into a movie. You know, they've just been a well-run organization that's worked around disadvantages, whereas the Jets are not necessarily at a disadvantage the way Oakland is. I mean, the Jets are pretty, and the NFL teams are generally on pretty even footing. Jets just have not done a good enough job building their team, and that's because they just have not had the, I think the correlation is just that management and the on-field coaching. You know, if you have good management, good on-field coaching, your team's going to be successful. If you don't, your team's not going to be successful. MyBookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie today, that's MyBookie, and if you use promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account, you can claim up to $1,000 in free play. And if you're willing to hold out until after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, you can get an extra $25 free play by using promo code LOCKEDON25, LOCKEDON number 2, number 5. You play, you win, you get paid at MyBookie. We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on the Jets at MetLife Stadium. With Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving our listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive $20 off orders of $200 or more to save even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you go to your favorite event. Our next question, has a head coach ever been demoted to defensive coordinator, or has there ever been a head coach fired by a team and then rehired by the same team to be a coordinator? I would think once someone is a head coach, he would want to stay at that level, not go down. Well, yeah, I think most coaches want to be head coaches, so I think if you go down, it's not your choice. But to answer the question, I'm not familiar with anybody who's been directly demoted from head coach to defensive coordinator. It would be a very awkward situation because the guy who's demoted would have a pre-existing relationship with all the players. He'd be used to being the boss. He'd have probably a relationship with the media. So it'd be an awkward situation all the way around where he'd have to step into a smaller role than he's used to. I'm sure there'd be ego involved. And it'd be an awkward situation for the new guy having somebody working for you who's used to being in charge of that team in that locker room, who, again, has relationships with the players, relationship with a lot of the beat writers, presumably. I mean, it's a recipe to potentially be undermined. So I think it would just be an awkward situation. I can think of a few examples of guys who came back. Gunther Cunningham was the head coach of the Chiefs, and after he was fired, he later came back to work as defensive coordinator under Dick Vermeil. Wade Phillips was the head coach of the Broncos in the 90s. About 20 years later, he came back. But those were situations where the guys left and did other things for a while, and then they came back after a period. They did not go immediately from being the head coach to the defensive coordinator. There was another example. This was not a guy who returned as a coordinator, but Dave Campo was the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys After Chan Gailey left, and he was fired by the Cowboys, and he later returned years later as an assistant coach. He was a position coach, though. He was the defensive backs coach. The Cowboys fired him after the 2002 season. He returned in 2008 as the defensive backs coach. So not a coordinator, but that was a situation. So usually there's a period where they get away from it, and then they come back, and it's maybe less of a hit to the ego. I'm curious as to why that question was asked. I mean, I would presume that it was not about Todd Bowles, because I don't know why you would want to, if you fire Todd Bowles, I don't know why you'd want to keep him as a coordinator. It used to be a very popular question when Rex Ryan was around, because Ryan had that defensive mind, and that would have been a bad idea to keep him on as defensive coordinator. He wouldn't have wanted to do it, and it would have been bad. That was something you heard much more of, like 2012, 2013, 2014, when Rex Ryan's job was on the line and people wanted to keep his defenses around. And for the reasons I mentioned, it would have been a bad idea. But it does happen later on. It happens a few years after the fact, but it doesn't really happen. You don't see a straight demotion. You see a guy leave and then come back in a lesser role. Next question. Let's see. Let's suppose this season is Bowles' make or break year. In your opinion, what is the biggest weakness he could fix or show substantial improvement to stay as head coach of the Jets? I'm going to approach this question a little differently, and I'm going to ask my own question, and I'm going to answer my own question. Is what about Todd Bowles? What area do you look at this team and you say Todd Bowles really makes that better? And I can't come up with anything. I really can't. I can't figure out one thing Todd Bowles does that really improves this team. Whether it's the defense. I mean, he was supposed to be a great defensive coach himself, and I have not seen it in the 4 years he's been here with the scheme. Is he a great developer of talent? Not really. Has he surrounded the team with a great coaching staff? Not really. I mean, there's just nothing. Does he run a game well? Is he a good game manager? No. So I think for me, there has to be something I can hang my hat on with Todd Bowles where I can say, this guy genuinely makes this team better in this way, because I can't think of anything. So I think by the end of the year, I'm going to have to feel that way. I'm going to feel like there's something I can name that this team, the New York Jets, are better because Todd Bowles is the head coach. Because right now, and again, we're over 3 years in, we're in year four. I can't really come up with anything he does that well that would make me say, man, the Jets can't afford to lose Todd Bowles. So there's got to be something he can hang his hat on more than anything. Next question. If you were the coach, would you have benched anybody for this game? If so, who? I'll tell you who I would have benched. I'd bench Terrell Pryor. The two straight games. Now, we all remember the interception against Miami where he ran a bad route. He hung Sam Darnold out to dry by running a bad route. That should have been a touchdown. A decent route. I'm convinced that play is a touchdown. He follows that up week three, third down play right before the half, runs a terrible route on a third down play. Ball's incomplete. Again, and they were lucky that pass wasn't picked off, because Pryor gave up on the route, allowed the defender to undercut it. Ball easily could have been picked off, and it could have been a big momentum-changing interception. Something, at some point you have to step in and say, you're not going to run your routes. You're on the bench. And what bothered me more than anything is the fact that as I was rewatching the game, I was watching how hard Jermaine Kearse was working. And Jermaine Kearse was really working his tail off. He was Jermaine Kearse was sacrificing for the good of the, because he was working really hard to block for Quincy Enunwa on screens. When I mean, there were plays where Kearse was blocking two guys, and I look at this and I say, what's wrong with this picture? You have one guy who's not putting any effort into his routes, who keeps getting playing time. You have another guy who's really working hard to set his teammates up on plays where the ball's not going to him, and Pryor's playing more than Kearse. Something's wrong there. Something is wrong there. So that bothers me. And I would, you know, something, if Pryor doesn't care enough to run his routes the right way, then get a guy in there who will. And listen, Kearse is not that talented of a guy, but he's gonna go out there. He's not gonna hang his quarterback out to dry. He's gonna be as much as there's a cliche, he's gonna be a professional receiver out there. He's gonna do a credible job. He's gonna try hard. And maybe the results won't be there, but the results aren't there with Pryor either. So that's the guy I'd bench for this game. And I'm frustrated that the coaching staff is giving Terrell Pryor more playing time than Jermaine Kearse, because that's one thing they know. It's one thing they certainly know. And maybe it will give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they'll see that. Maybe they weren't aware of. Maybe of the type of route Pryor ran, you know, maybe they'll figure that out after they review the tape. But I'll tell you, I would make that change. That's a change I would make. Next question: in your gut, do you think this is the last season for Bowles? You know, if you're asking me right now, and there's a lot of time, and I could be wrong about this, but I said this on Friday's show after that loss in Cleveland. Is that's the type of loss that really sets you up for the type of season where you make wholesale changes. I mean, that's, and again, that Cleveland loss is fresh in my mind, so that's probably playing a role in all of this. But man, I mean, that's just the type of loss that I feel like that's the type of loss where, and I'm hearing this a lot from people who are fans, and I even kind of feel it myself, where you wanted to give Todd Bowles a chance, and I was never on the fire Bowles train in 2016 or even last year. It wasn't that I thought Bowles was great. It's just I feel like you have to give a guy some time, and that's kind of a game that made me see that this might not be the right coach for the Jets in any number of areas. In any number of areas, when we talk about team discipline, when we talk about, you know, play calling in key spots, when we talk about the coaching staff he's assembled. You know, there's just so many things that it was kind of a crystallizing moment for me that makes me wonder, is Todd Bowles the right coach for this team, and kind of question that. And losing to Cleveland, that type of game, off a bad loss to Miami, again, another game that was there for the taking. And, you know, this is what bugs me as much as anything is, like, you go out and lose because the other team's great, so be it. The other team's better than you, so be it. Right now, Miami's one of the toasts of the league. Cleveland's another one of the toasts of the league. The Jets had chances to beat both of those teams, legitimate chances. There were two games that were there for the taking, and the Jets very easily could be 3-0 right now, and they could be the team everybody's talking about. And they're not, and they failed to take advantage of those things. So, you know, if you're asking me in my gut right now, yeah, I kind of do feel like this might be, we might have reached a turning point for Bowles last Thursday night. Now, that could all change very quickly. I'm not saying that Bowles is finished, but if you're asking me how I think this is going to play out, that's kind of what I'm thinking at the moment. Our next question, we turn to baseball. Who should the Yankees start in the wild card game against the Oakland A's? You know, if you'd asked me before last night, I would have said Tanaka, but I'm a little spooked by the start he had. I think I'm actually going to say, and you know, I was going to say, originally I was going to say Jay Happ, but you know what I'll say? I'd make it a bullpen day. I'd use the bullpen. I'd extend the bullpen out, use the bullpen depth the Yankees have. And, you know, you remember, I mean, they pretty much won the last year's wild card game against Minnesota because it was a bullpen day. Now, that was not planned. Luis Severino got hit pretty hard in the first inning, so they had to go to the bullpen early. But I think I'd use the bullpen depth. I think that's probably the direction I would lean in right now. For the Yankees in the wild card game. Next question. How good has Avery Williamson been so far? It feels like a lot of us aren't really appreciating him yet. Well, I was not that impressed week one. I think part of it is I was not that impressed week one or week two by Williamson's performance, but that was a spectacular week three performance. I mean, he was all over the field. I think it was 14 tackles. I mean, just a monster game, constantly making plays, constantly shutting down Cleveland's run. Making big tackles. And I'll tell you, if he plays more games like that, he is going to be a guy we're going to appreciate. So, you know, he's coming off a really, he's coming off as good of a game as I've seen a linebacker play in a while, a Jets linebacker play in a while. And I'll also say this, I think Darren Lee has me cautiously optimistic because I really like what I've seen from Lee so far this year. And I don't, again, you know, as we say, with bad things, things could change. Well, with good things, things could also change. So, you know, Lee's, you know, one bad game away from being back in the doghouse, but he's impressive. He's looked like, I really feel like Lee's looked like a different player so far. He's using his speed. He's making an impact. I'm seeing an impact out there when I look at Darren Lee so far. So far, so good from the linebacking. Now, I don't think Lee played a strong Week 2 game, but you know, I'm getting optimistic about this linebacking core. I think that based on what I've seen so far, it could be a strength of the team. Now, let's see how they go out and play on Sunday. In the NFL, you're only 1 week away. You're only as good as your last performance, so we'll see how they play. But Williamson coming off a very strong game. He keeps putting up games like that. We're going to notice him quite a bit, I think. Next question. Be honest. If the Jets beat the Jaguars, are you thinking playoffs? Will I be? Honestly, yes. I am thinking playoffs. The Jets, this would be a big win for the Jets to come back off two bad losses, go to Jacksonville, beat a team that a lot of people view as a potential Super Bowl team, get to 2-2. Yeah, the Jets are right in the mix. I mean, it's not like the AFC is that great. And I think the path of the Jets through the playoffs for the Jets is kind of, at this point, you know, keep treading water. And it's going to be, sometimes what happens, I've seen it in a number of cases, is you tread water early in the year, and then the rookie quarterback just starts to put it together the second half and gets hot and kind of carries you on a big stretch. So I think that's kind of the path to the Jets for the playoffs. So they get a win, I think this is a pretty important game on Sunday. I don't think it's do or die, because I do think there's a winnable game following it against Denver. But I do think that this is the type of game that could really set the Jets up to do something special this year, or it could, you know, dropping them to 1-3 puts them in a more precarious situation where they almost would have to win next week against Denver if they lose this game this week. So I think, yeah, this is an important game, and if the Jets win, go get to 2-2, especially if Darnold plays well against this defense, then yeah, I think it's totally fair to say, hey, maybe this is a team that could make a playoff run. Next question is about Leonard Williams, and it's asking me for my opinion whether Leonard Williams is overrated or underrated. And again, maybe this is just being too focused on the recent thing, and it really hurts me to say it because he's a guy I've really enjoyed watching for the Jets, but I actually am starting to feel like he's a little overrated. I mean, I just keep waiting for that game that he totally takes over. I'm waiting for him to become, you know, a dominant. He's a good run stopper. He's good at tying up blockers. You know, he genuinely wins his assignment. But I'm waiting for him to just take over. You know, take over a game, take over a couple games. You know, pile up some sacks. It really be noticeable. And look, putting up a goose egg in Cleveland certainly doesn't help things. And he's a guy. He's a very good player. And don't get me wrong, but I don't, you know, when the Jets drafted him, he was supposed to be the special prospect. You know, he was kind of supposed to be Aaron Donald. He was supposed to be that type of defender. And instead, what the Jets have gotten is a very good player, a guy who's excellent against the run, who not a bad pass rusher, but I just don't see a guy who takes over games. And if you're asking me right now, would I pay him like Aaron Donald? I hope the Jets can retain him. I'm not sure. I don't think I'm giving him Aaron Donald money if that's what he wants. Maybe he doesn't want that. I don't think he should want that. I don't think that's the type of player he is. But am I giving him that type of money if that's what it came down to? I don't think so. I do think maybe in the fam, maybe he's a little overrated because you're just not seeing him take that step that you were hoping to see, that, you know, become, you know, that elite all pro type player. That guy who carries a team. You know, I'm just not seeing that, and it's frustrating. It's disappointing because I've been thinking he's going to get there. I've been hoping he's going to get there. And is it the greatest sin in the world that if he just ends up being a very good player? No. Does that make it the worst pick in the world? No. But it does make it a little disappointing. I think to be fair, Jets fans were probably hoping for a little bit more. That'll do it for our show today. Thanks for all the questions. Sorry we could not get to all of them. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you like the show, subscribe, iTunes, Spotify, and leave the show a good review on iTunes if you enjoy it. Hope you have a great Thursday. We'll be back tomorrow to preview Jets-Jaguars.